Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Welcome back to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I am your host today, Carl Sweeney, and this is our listener feedback episode for the 8th episode of Season 11, Familiar. And joining me on the X-Cast for the second time, I believe, is blogger and huge X-Files fan, Kelechi Ihenuolo. Hi, Kelechi.
Hi, Carl. How you doing?
Yeah, doing really well, thanks. And it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's been a long time, so I'm happy to be back, and thank you for inviting me back on this.
Yeah, it was a while, wasn't it? I think it was pre-season 11. So let's start off by getting some of your thoughts on season 11. How have you found it so far?
I'm going to put my hand on my heart and say this, and it's defied all expectations. I'm thoroughly enjoying this season. It's probably the most fun I've had watching the show since probably like season 8. And you know, when we did the podcast originally, I talked about, you know, it's, you know, trying to get it on focus and maybe not try and be so on the nose in terms of reflecting the current world today. So it's nice to know that season 11 has completely ignored all that. And it's nice to be also proven wrong. And every episode has been a nice slice of humble pie for me. And I've really enjoyed the you know, the kind of social commentary aspect on it. And, you know, every episode has been that challenge, you know, and I think it's some are sort of similar to what Twin Peaks, The Return did. It's kind of dragged the sort of 90s nostalgia and kind of brought it up to date and focus on that sort of human responsibility. And I guess it forces us to engage in those debates and face that harsh truth of reality. So as an overall, in terms of a thematic, I think this season has been really engaging and really positive. And It's kind of sad. It's kind of coming to an end, but you know, all good things must end. But overall, I've enjoyed it much more than I thought I would. So I take my hat off to everyone involved, and you know, from cast and the crew. You know, they've been doing a stellar job. It's not to say that it's not has its faults or its nitpicks or its concerns, but I don't necessarily think there's been a bad episode. I think every episode has been entertaining in its own way, and I think that's defied expectations for certainly for me as a viewer and able to sort of enjoy this as what it's been about, which has kind of been a social commentary.
Yeah, I think that's very fair, and I agree basically. And the issue of like nostalgia and social commentary comes up again in this episode, doesn't it? Familiar. So yeah, just before we dive into the mailbag, you know, what did you make of this episode?
I'm going to be honest again. I think it took me a little bit of a time to kind of get used to it, because, you know, it doesn't have, I guess, that instant satisfaction that I got from, say, Followers or This or The Lost Art of the Forehead Sweat, you know, where you can like, I enjoyed it so much, I can just like instantly replay it and get a huge euphoria out of it. But having said that, you know, I absolutely love this episode. I think it's a subtle yet positive throwback to the original sort of run of it. You know, this episode could have easily been from season 2 or season, you know, season 5 or season 7. You know, I think as we'll talk in greater depth, you know, there's almost like a Chimera feel about it. It's almost like a Chinga feel about it. There's a lot of that kind of thing. And it was nice to actually see a proper Monster of the Week episode, because we haven't really seen that in a long, long time. And I think the last time, or certainly the last time I enjoyed a Monster of the Week was probably from like season 8 with the sort of flying bat with, I think it was Impatience, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really enjoy that kind of old school nostalgia, but yet somehow able to take that balance between Mulder and Scully and then still tap into the sort of greater social commentary that this whole season has been about. So I was certainly ranked that as arguably one of the best episodes of the season, so by far.
Okay, we'll pick up on some of those aspects as we go along then. And let's start with some of the feedback we had come in on Facebook. I want to hear from some of our Twitter users, Twitter followers this week too, but we'll do a bit from Facebook. And this is from our fan group, X-Files Basement. And yeah, let's start with Tony then, who said, "I may be accused of hyperbole here, but damn it, someone give the keys of this franchise to Benjamin Van Allen when Chris Carter hangs up his boots. This was pretty damn fantastic across the board. Exactly the kind of standalone X-File we've been chomping at the bit for since 2002. A deep sense of creepy, rural, post-colonial atmosphere, lots of historical and sociological commentary, a story which, while admittedly fairly easy to guess, twisted and turned nicely, and Mulder and Scully feeling, appropriately, wonderfully familiar in their roles. Loved it." Yeah, so you've got the opportunity there, Kelechi, to accuse Tony of hyperbole. So what do you say?
I'm just going to join him. I think Tony touched upon pretty much how I felt about it. I think as a standpoint, like I said, it took me a little bit of a time just to get used to it, because it was so, every episode of the season has been so experimental. We've seen kind of Black Mirror influences. We've seen kind of, a technological standpoint, and we've seen a little bit of, nods to the mythology that, the whole aspect of the Monster of the Week was almost like a forgotten friend in a sense. So to see that come back, it was almost kind of shocked. I was like, oh, where have you been? And, and it's come back in such a strong way that will forever probably haunt my dreams with the introduction of Mr. Chuckleteeth and that whole outset. I might be the only one who thought of this as well when I was watching it, but there's this whole kind of also Stephen King kind of vibe about it. The whole, the opening teaser was pretty much like It. You even had young Andrew wearing the yellow jacket as well, which is obviously a throwback to kind of like Georgie, Mr. Chuckleteeth, like Pennywise the Clown, the Hellhound was like Cujo. There's a lot of that vibe, which tapped into that creepiness and, also tapped into also my sort of childhood fear of, and I still to this day, I don't know how I managed to watch it as a kid, and how I watched Stephen King's It as a kid, and being completely freaked out by Tim Curry. So, and then braving that fear to go and see the remake last year, and Mr. Chuckleteeth being that, almost tapping into that same kind of terror. I'm not gonna lie, and I'm gonna admit this. I did have a cushion nearby because I was was pretty freaked out. So I definitely agree with what Tony was saying. I think there's a large amount of creepiness that is also psychological because of the kind of mob mentality that was brought up in the episode, but also the idea of it focusing entirely on an actual or devoting its time to showcase that monster, and being that fearful and knowing that there are still that evil that lurking in the town as well. So I think I'm fully supportive of what Tony said. I'm joining him.
Good stuff. What about, so he says, like, admittedly it was fairly easy to guess. I mean, did you find like the various plot twists and turns easy to guess when you were watching it the first time?
I think I was too distracted by Mr. Chuckleteeth and those creepy creepy Teletubbies. So I don't think I was as kind of invested or trying to think too far ahead. What I will say is that I did feel maybe that it might have been one of the kids, because I think X-Files has always had that kind of long standing history where we always kind of look at the adults and look at, like their role and involvement in the whole thing, and then suddenly it's like the twist is like, oh no, it was the kids' fault, it's them doing the madness. So there was a point where I thought it might have been Emily, but and just smart beyond her words, but I guess it's it's down to sort of perception. I think I was at that time just a bit too distracted by all the other creepiness to kind of follow through, but you know, it, for me, it, I guess it just didn't surprise me that it ended up being one of the parents. And, you know, and the fact that it revolved around something as specific or something as human as her, Anna, I think Anna Strong getting revenge back on her husband and her and his cheating ways, and then unleashing something that was greater and beyond her control and her experience. So there's kind of almost, you know, not to say it sound like in a bad way, it's almost like a sort of a karma aspect to it as well. So yeah, I don't think it was as easily guessable as it is. I think it was totally focused in being in that, in its point of view, and that was kind of to raise, you know, the supernatural aspects with Mulder and Scully, the kind of practical, you know, logical through point, and then making the point of his social commentary points. And, you know, if there was anything guessable, it didn't kind of attract me or disturb me in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm useless at guessing plot twists, so I didn't really guess it in advance. But yeah. I've seen a few people say that they did, so that's fair enough. And yeah. Let's press on. Let's do a couple more from Facebook. And Bethany Good said, "That was really dark and creepy. Really creepy. Also, it hit some nice emotional beats. It was especially scary for me because my kids are the age of the child victims. I also got some themes from The Scarlet Letter," and then the Nathaniel Hawthorne book, of course. "And it reminded me of the episode Die Hand, die Verletzt. The directing was good. It kept a nice, tense pace." And Marlene Stemmy said, "My initial response is that it was greatly creepy and atmospheric, but the emotional beats seemed slotted in rather than emerging from the story. Mulder and Scully seemed to be reacting to what happened rather than being a necessary aspect of the episode. To me, it seemed like a well-constructed tribute to older episodes rather than a great story in its own right. I may change my mind when I rewatch." On the issue that she picks up there, I mean, she's definitely right to identify this, I think, that Mulder and Scully are in largely in this kind of reactive role. I think the biggest effect they have on the plot, really, is that Scully's profile kind of kicks things off, because that eventually gets back to the policeman, who sort of takes things into his own hands. But other than that, they're kind of playing catch-up. And this is the first Mulder and Scully episode that's been like this for quite some time, I think. You could even go back as far as like something like Thief in Season 7, because in a lot of the subsequent standalones, they're much more like personally involved. But I guess the debate is about whether or not this is a problem or not. Yeah, how do you see it?
I didn't find it too much of a problem. I think, you know, like I said, you know, I was kind of almost just basking into the whole setup, that it didn't cross my mind in terms of, you know, this wasn't a problematic issue. I think I think when you're dealing with something as sensitive as with child murders, and
with the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In this sense, you know, it's always going to hit a raw nerve, I guess, you know. And yes, they are reacting to it, but I think it's also because Mulder and Scully at this point in time are in an almost different style of relationship and intimacy, I guess. You know, maybe back in the day, you know, with them as partners, they could kind of almost be detached away from it, in a sense. You know, they can be sympathetic and empathetic and, you know, pursue the cause of justice in their own right. But because over the years the X-Files has become more personal towards them, you know, the fact that you have, you know, their parents, you know, that William is out there, so to speak, that, you know, the emotional side of it has almost maybe in some respects overwhelmed them. So I kind of enjoyed that new style of that dynamic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you know, yeah, Scully sort of, you know, being the sort of, you know, sparking the I guess, the hysteria, I guess, I don't know, it feels maybe it's a little bit unfair, because at the end of the day, she is, you know, she is a criminal investigator. She works for the FBI. So, I mean, I don't know the standpoint on it, but I'm assuming that, you know, when it comes to something as grisly as a child death, you know, the number one suspect would be someone within the family. And those tough questions have to be asked, and, you know, and they have to kind of pursue that line of thought. So in that respect, I think Scully going through that kind of rational, practical, logical side of it, that becomes that trigger, and that becomes that through point as a standpoint. And then Mulder's kind of left to explore the sort of maybe the supernatural side. But I don't think it necessarily bothered me. I think, you know, I think as I was saying, you know, this has become almost a personal journey. I think there are personal emotive responses from them that I felt was genuinely heartfelt. But I also felt there's a great sense of maturity in that relationship. You know, they're backing each other up, you know, that might not have been evidently present back in the day, but it's now because they're kind of in it together. You know, they've have this shared experience, and you know, there's that I guess a love and affection, but it's showcasing a different kind of way, because they still maintain a sense of professionalism. It might be reactionary, but I think because they're reacting to an uncontrollable mass hysteria and mob mentality, you can't always control that. They can't always sort of be at the center of that point of, I guess. So that, I don't know. Does any of that make sense? Do you agree with any of that, Carl?
Totally makes sense. Yeah. On the issue of like Scully's, you know, investigative stance, I thought that was quite well done, really, because it made complete logical sense to me that, you know, yeah, she's seen all sorts of weird stuff, but in this instance, the evidence seemed to be pointing towards, you know, a murder, and it seemed logical that you would examine the immediate family or sex offenders in the area. So I had no issue with, like, the fact that they've got this oppositional viewpoint in that respect. I did think then when Mulder's kind of, he sort of seems to lump Scully in with the mob a bit later on. He's saying, like, you and these people are convicting him based on blah, blah, blah. Whereas I did understand why Scully's mind went where it did, to be honest. Yeah, let's do it a couple more from Facebook. And this is Caradwen Foley, and I've slightly abridged this message down a bit. And she said, I liked the story of this episode very, very much. I thought it was a much better and creepier version of Chinga. I also appreciated that the show was willing to be audacious but not gratuitous about the crimes portrayed. That said, there were a few false notes for me. It didn't make sense to me to have Mulder be the one to see the Mr. Chuckleteeth mask at the felon's house and hear Emily mention it, and then have him condemning the town's rush to judgment. I think it would have made more sense to have Scully see those two details. They would have added credence to the theory that the felon had lured the kids out to the woods. It felt like a small narrative misstep, but it's a pretty minor quibble. I did find some of Mulder's lines pretty heavy-handed and preachy, but The X-Files has never been particularly subtle when it wants to send a message. Like, we don't need to be told that mobs are bad in an episode where we literally watch a town attempt to stone a man to death. It was definitely not as relentlessly on the nose as the Teach Your Children stuff from last week, though. Even though there wasn't a ton of character red meat for the actors, I thought Duchovny's acting was quite good, particularly in the scenes with the Chief of Police and with Emily. I thought Anderson actually seemed uncharacteristically sleepy in this one. So there's a few things we could pick up on there, but, you know, like she uses the phrase heavy-handed and preachy, and I think when you've got lines like the one I alluded to earlier, where Mulder says, like, you and this mob are reconvicting him for the sins of his past with a fervour that we see too often in this American experience of ours. I think when you hear stuff like that, I think the charge of, like, heavy-handedness has got some merit to it, to be honest. I don't know what you think.
It does. I think they're really, really good points. You know, you can, you know, I think I know where Mulder's kind of coming from. I don't think he was trying to push Scully in, you know, as deeply into that, you know, mob mentality. You know, I think he's sort of making, as usual, you know, his starts. I think it kind of, you know, I still think the episode overall still adopts a serious tone. It's, you know, there's not, you know, there's nothing to joke about in this entire episode. But I think, you know, the idea of, you know, two wrongs don't make a right is something that stood out for me. You know, obviously you have the convicted pedophile, you know, the crime he has done in that state was, you know, the fact that he didn't announce himself to the community since he moved there. And the fact that somehow in this creepy reality, he's still a children's entertainer. So there's that kind of aspect. But for this specific crime, he wasn't, he was technically, you know, inverted commas, innocent. And then you have, you know, Officer Eggers, you know, obviously he's heartbroken and distraught, and he basically takes justice into his own hands. And I think there is, you know, the statement that it obviously is, as we've all alluded to, you know, is the, you know, the idea of mob mentality and being bad. But I think Mulder was also trying to touch on that essence of, you know, the principles of democracy, you know, and it was put on such an intense spotlight, you know, and the fact that you would probably argue that Familiar was almost like an evolution of how witch hunts have evolved. You know, we've kind of gone from the idea of kind of burning so-called witches at the stake, and then he's mentioning, you know, issues of McCarthyism, and even relating to even nowadays where, you know, we're seeing that kind of witch hunt mob mentality on social media. You know, I think about, you know, how, you know, something like The Last Jedi had suffered that kind of scrutiny, to the point where there was that mob mentality to sign a fan petition to remove it from canon and all that kind of stuff. And then you kind of move it into the kind of political stances like immigration, gun control, and religion. So I think as a whole, as a series, I think it's always stepped into a kind of political or certainly a preachy stance, you know, certainly for this season in particular. And I think it kind of stands up into that reason. But I think what Mulder was trying to illustrate that is that two wrongs don't make a right. And it does prove a point when they're sitting in that courtroom and Eggers, who has committed a crime for killing, inverted commas, an innocent man, and yet he's still released on bail. And even though he's a danger to himself, he's emotionally distraught and heartbroken, but yet he is volatile. And you have this kind of mentality of a small, kind of like small town justice, you know, or yeah, you know, hey, you know, we will back our police officers, but in the end, we still kind of got our killer, you know, inverted commas, and kind of sweeping it under the rug and so forth. So, you know, as I said, I don't think it's not meant to be as deeply as you know, as what was happening with, you know, he mentioned with Scully, you know, pushing it as, you know, you're condemning him in the same way. I think for Scully, it was her following the traditional police route, you know, looking at the closest suspects and criminals and you know, who could have done this, and looking at it from a practical and rational side of it. And I think Mulder's, as always, has always been thinking out of the box. It doesn't necessarily mean that he was proven right or Scully was proven wrong and vice versa. I think it's just the nature of the world that we live in today is that the essence of due process, or, you know, something that is we call as a democratic right, seems to have been lost. And, you know, it's almost like as a society, we're kind of almost looking for something to blame, which clouds the real truth. And I think it was trying to kind of wade through that essence. I don't know. I think that's probably right. Yeah.
Well, the writer Benjamin Van Allen pointed in interviews to some of the things you mentioned there about, like, online discourse and so on. And I think anyone who spends a bit of time on Twitter, for example, will recognize the kind of herd mentality you sort of see there. And it can be very, like, unpleasant, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The more time I spend on Twitter, the more I sort of have some qualms about the way things are going, you know. But there we go. I mean, you can find us on Twitter, of course, at the X _ cast. Let's do one last one for Facebook, and then we'll get on to Twitter itself. So Anna Bastow said, "This was a pretty damn good episode. Wonderful atmosphere, great plot, awesome casting, creepy and unsettling. The two newbies team up was an absolutely great combo. Van Allen really did a great job, and I liked the whole Chimera and Sins of the Parents overall theme, as the theme of mobs and innocence blood spilled in the same place, like it is a cyclical curse. I also liked the little details like Scully thanking Mulder for backing her up, Scully talking about how hard it is to do this with kids, and Mulder saying that he talked to Emily before she died. A lot of empathy that sometimes doesn't show up in these episodes. I almost wish for a season 12 if these two get to do more work in the show." Keyword, almost. Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking this a little bit recently, but, you know, I've been thinking, wow, is there some more mileage left? You know, do we want to see more X-Files? Or do we want them to go out on a strong season like this, you know? What do you reckon?
I'm going to be greedy. I want more. Yeah. You know? I think, you know, I've come from, I'm one of those kind of first generation fans. You know, I watched grew up watching the show since I was 8 years old. And, you know, I've kind of lived through, you know, pretty much most of my childhood going into teenage life, you know, having the X-Files and then kind of coming to a natural end back in 2002. So pretty much anything we've had right now has been, you know, it's almost like a blessing, and it's great. And I've been entirely grateful, you know, so everything's kind of like been a bonus. You know, there is also feeling of maybe, you know, it could outstay its welcome. But if you keep delivering good stuff like this, then of course, you know, there's going to be thoughts of, you know, a point of view.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me. And you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Kind of like, you know, maybe you should keep this going, you know, can't try and do it. But if it ends in a way that is, you know, positive and still leaves an engaging question to, you know, that we as fans can sort of take away. I don't see a reason why it just can't just end on a good note and with a bang, you know. But, you know, the natural, you know, the fan in me was like, no, it needs to last forever. I want them to do this forever. I wanted to keep telling these amazing stories. And I think, if anything, I think season 11 has definitely showed that they still got the talent. They still got the stories. They still know how to creep people out. And as a, you know, as I've said before, you know, as a social commentary piece, which, you know, in a few years, again, it might feel dated. It might not resonate as much. But, you know, they really are going for it. And I think that's the best thing that the show can do, is just that they're taking this element and just putting it out there and leaving nothing behind. And we're seeing the sort of benefits of that. We're seeing a much more engaged Mulder and Scully as a partnership, as well as, you know, as a you know, for, on a shipper level, you know, on a romantic side, but also, you know, on a professionalism side. You know, they're both back on sync, which wasn't there in season 10. You know, it was up and down for me with season 10. And we're seeing it in terms of the storylines. You know, there is a definite focus, but every episode has tied in with its theme in a positive way. So I feel like overall I want it to end on a real good high and leave it be. But if there is a possibility it will come back, you know, don't give up.
Maybe we could have a Mr. Chuckleteeth spin-off or something. You know?
maybe not, Carl. Maybe not.
Yeah. All right, let's on Twitter. So Clara Cook said, "It was nice to see both Mulder and Scully more emotionally affected by the deaths in this episode. They can often seem quite flippant around people who have died violently." Yeah, there wasn't a huge amount of humour, although Scully did make one joke about the sex offender stirring more than his cauldron. Which I could perhaps accuse her of flippancy there, I think. Wendy Atwell says, "Pleasing to see a classic style Monster of the Week episode with Mulder and Scully back in a small town stroke the forest. We needed one of those this season. Chillingly scary hellhound, and I say that as someone who usually wants to snuggle the monster canines. I immediately thought of creepy 80s kids TV character Nosy Bonk, but I was surprised to read that he actually was the inspiration for the terrifying Mr. Chuckleteeth. Mulder scared by a monkey was a nice touch." This character Nosy Bonk was from a kids' TV show called Jigsaw, which I think must have been just before my time, because I don't remember it. I don't know if you do.
It's probably before my time as well. You know, I still remember Playdays and growing up on Sesame Street. So I think I escaped most of that kind of childhood stuff.
Well, do me a favor. When we stop recording, have a look at this character online, because it's quite surprising that something who looks like that would end up on a kids' TV show. But this apparently was the inspiration, at least in part, for Mr. Chuckleteeth. So yeah, let's talk a bit more about Mr. Chuckleteeth. I think this will be one of those things where, you know, in years to come, when I think of the episode Familiar, the image that will come to mind, I think, is of him kind of peeking out, peering out from behind the tree, you know, early in the episode. Just a great kind of weird creation, wasn't he?
Yeah, I can. If I'm not joking, if someone dresses up like him for Halloween this year, I think I'm just gonna run a mile, because that face will just haunt my dreams. And you know, I think again, it sort of taps into the kind of you know from a personal experience, the sort of Stephen King you know vibe, and you know how we look at you know entertainers or clowns as what. Chuckleteeth is not a clown, but you know, it's that kind of same sort of similar kind of, it's meant to be kind of nice and, you know, and sweet and innocent, but it's clearly from that demonic smile and the kind of the movement just kind of, it just creeps me out. And in it's something that is classic X-Files to almost do that kind of reverse psychology on that, and also just classic in terms of able to still creep you out after all these years. And as you said, you know, that image of him sort of peeking out behind the tree, and you know, just it's haunting. I definitely do not want to be around that kind of thing. You know, I feel like just getting some holy water and just throwing some stuff right there, just get back there. Not today, Satan. You know, that kind of thing. So I think it was what was kind of interesting as well, is that how engrossed the kids were in it. You know, I think you see young Andrew with a little doll of Mr. Chuckleteeth, and you know, I think it also speaks volumes about the, you know, influence of watching a children's show and how that influence out into the real world, you know. But you know, I don't know if I was a parent of Andrew, I would give a child that doll to play with as a plaything. I think I would just, you know, switch to Sesame Street and said, like, you focus on this, have something positive to watch, kids. You don't need this creepy little thing. So you know, I think it has the potential to be as another kind of cultural influencer on horror. And I think it did a really good job, Benjamin Van Allen and Holly Dale as a director. I think they did a really good job in bringing that creepiness. And you know, as we've talked before, is that nostalgia, and you know, like, this episode could easily have been in season 2 or season 5 or season 7 and really bring that to light, but yet still manage to find that I guess that beauty essence to still creep you out in the same way that, you know, Pennywise has left that cultural legacy. And and now if you go to Comic Cons, you now see hundreds of guys dressed up as Pennywise, which is a little unnerving. But you know, if I start seeing Chuckleteeth, I know that X-Files did its job well.
Well, there's just been an X-Fest convention in America, isn't there? And they're doing another one next year. So I mean, somebody's bound to turn up dressed as Mr. Chuckleteeth, aren't they? It's bound to happen.
I wouldn't. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And fair play to them, but I think I'll just probably just stay at a distance. Like, it's like, salute them. Said, "Yep, well done," but not for me. I'm just gonna run them off.
All right, Russell Hugo, my sparring partner from last week on the followers mailbag, says, "Take that, Alpha. Episodes with killer dogs can be watchable." And he also says, "Recalled Millennium Season 3's Through a Glass Darkly in tone, setting, and subject matter." BBFB, which I guess, I think that must stand for Bring Back Frank Black. Mm. The Scully cauldron churning joke was in very poor taste. But finally, he says, hooray for a 3.5 star out of 5 monster of the week. Please make 20 more. So 3.5 stars out of 5. Yeah, I think he's about on the right lines there. Maybe I could stretch to a 4. I'm not sure. What would you give it out of 5?
I would give it a 4. I would definitely agree. Yeah, I think there's more positives out of that episode than I would say negatives. Yes, I would say the Scully, you know, cauldron stirring was probably a little bit too far for the imagination. But I think overall, in terms of, you know, its setting, its location, again, you know, the whole old school vibe, you know, the Stephen King vibe, it just does the basics very, very well. You know, just visually looks brilliant. You know, in terms of horror, it looks brilliant. You know, I think it does such a great job in putting that together and as a balance. And I 4 out of 5 definitely would come to my mind.
We'll do a few more tweets. And Kathy G said, I liked it as a good standalone Monster of the Week episode. I can't help wanting more from the show right now, though, since we're coming to the end. I realise that's probably unfair, since The X-Files has always been a mix of standalone and mythology episodes, but I want the story to move forward. And I think that's like a very fair point, you know, because the way like the first half of the season unfolded, where you had episode two, this, which tied into the mythology, and then like plus one, where, you know, there's some obviously very meaningful Mulder and Scully interactions. And then like at the halfway point, you had Ghoulie, which was kind of momentous in its own way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But like, I suppose like the last 2 or 3 weeks haven't really been like that. So, I mean, we might get some forward movement in episode 9, I don't really know, but I think it is a fair point that Kathy brings up, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can almost, you know, in a sort of a nice, gentle way, accuse Familiar of being almost stuck in its past. You know, it's almost like it's, I would say more so that this than, say, Followers from the previous episode. That, you know, this it could have easily been an episode from season 2 or season 5. So it's almost like Mulder and Scully are at a standstill and they haven't progressed away. But I guess it's the unique thing about the X-Files, it's up to the, you know, the writer and their vision. And I think, you know, with Benjamin Van Allen, he had a specific tone and vision for this episode. You know this, it's Mulder and Scully in a town, you know, which we haven't seen in a long time. You know, the last time we saw that this season was probably in that great depth was Plus One, you know, arriving in a town, noticing that there's something evil in the air, and then them trying to investigate. And Familiar is that natural extension of that. So I think there's a lot to gather from that. And again, it comes down to this specific vision. I think where we kind of love that continuity is, you know, we've seen it with, you know, James Wong, you know, in terms of Ghoulie and making and, you know, getting the sort of mythology thread to it. But I think that, you know, as I mentioned, you know, I think Chris Carter has had a specific vision of doing the mythologies as a bookend, and then everything else is up to what the writers he's acquired to help build into those episodes. And as it's true that yes, X-Files has always done this, but I think because we're noticing it a lot more is because the episode length has been shorter, so it's kind of almost destabilizing in a way. I don't think it's been a total abandonment, because I still see the thematic connections between each episode. The fact that it is this shift from focus of, I would say, the 90s nostalgia and the fantastical element of, you know, the truth is out there and there's aliens and so forth. And then it's now shifted onto a human responsibility, which is, again, forcing us to engage in those debates and forcing us to almost come to reality, you know, of what humanity is capable of. And you know, it's very much Millennium in that respect, and I think I've joined that, I enjoyed that on that kind of level. But yes, I do wish that was maybe a bit more of a connection on the mythology side to kind of give it a little bit of a conclusion. But it's really up to what the writers have had intended, and I guess with Benjamin Van Allen, he had a very specific vision to foresee this. I don't, what do you think, Carl?
Well, I think what'll be interesting is next time out, when we get episode 9, there was actually a switch in broadcast order where this episode, Familiar, was the 9th one filmed, and they've moved it to number 8 in the running order. So it may well be that episode 9, next week's episode, it would flow better into the finale, and that might be what motivated the switch. I don't quite know.
Maybe, yeah.
So let's wait and see. And I think the other thing is that, and we might touch on this a bit at the end, but if Chris Carter miraculously pulls off an incredibly satisfying, you know, 45-minute conclusion to the season with My Struggle 4, I think that's sort of playing on people's minds a bit at the minute.
Yeah.
I suspect that anyway. But yeah, like I say, we'll come back to that when we wrap up here. Let's do just a few more. So Cortland said, I loved seeing the mature, grown-up Mulder and Scully still disagreeing about Monster of the Week, but really having each other's backs. Yet another great example of what I imagined a modern Monster of the Week revival episode should look like. That said, I did think it was a little predictable at the end. And Priyan Garnet Lahar said, oh, I'm deeply in love. And I assume she means with the episode. And she's Familiar was astoundingly macabre, horrifyingly beautiful, magnificently presented. In short, exemplary. Nothing has felt this satisfying since Forehead Sweat. MKB says, classic Monster of the Week, X-Files. I've seen many horror films, and this was better than 99% of them. Chuck E. Cheese 2, for whatever his name was, and the Teletubbies from Hell actually made me scream and gasped when the cop went rogue and shot that guy. Yeah, that moment took me by surprise. I don't know about you.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's... builds into that again what I've been saying about the kind of social commentary and the you know, the whole idea of, you know, taking justice into your own hands and that mob mentality. So I was definitely almost shocked by it. I thought it was going to be resolved with the fact that Morden Scully turned up and, you know, again saving an inverted commas an innocent man from a death. But when you have such an emotionally charged incident, obviously involving Officer Eggers, again, it's not surprising that it went that way, but it was still a shocking moment to be seen, because I think you kind of almost get lured into a false sense of security. I don't know if you felt that way. So to see that kind of come into a realization, I think that was definitely took me by surprise, and it was definitely in a shock mode. I couldn't. It was definitely just scary in that respect. It's just a horrifying way of, you know, like I said, about, you know, about human responsibility and how it's transcended into that, like it's kind of gone escalated in that way. And, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that maybe the influence of the entity that was released by Anna Strong, you know, and Mr. Chuckleteeth, and the kind of various games that was being played, you know, maybe the tricks that he was playing, that maybe added to the hysteria of the town. You know, it kind of reminds me of what Pennywise did with in It, where, you know, it was almost a reversal. It wasn't hysteria. It was almost like a total lack of acknowledgement of what was happening to the kids. It was like, whatever, you know, whereas in Familiar, it was almost the reversal, where, you know, you have an obvious target and everyone is just losing their minds to go to approach this and throw in stones, like, you know, almost in the sense of a biblical sense, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, I guess Mulder, Scully, and Roger Cross as Officer Wentworth, great to see Roger Cross back.
Yeah.
I just want to say that. You know, they seem to be the only three people that were sane about it, you know, in contrast to the growing escalation of the entire case. So as a moment, it definitely, it kind of put it into context about how, you know, sadly, how crazy humanity can go and the level of depths that it can go to kind of, you know, illustrate a point. And it was done in a graphic manner and definitely shocked me.
Yeah, well, they didn't really pull their punches in this episode, did they? Because there were like two child deaths, you know, quite hard hitting. And that moment where he gets shot in the head, and I think the police chief shoots the other policeman, doesn't he? And
yeah.
Anna burns alive at the end. So
it's pretty dark, you know. And I think they've handled, you know, especially when you're dealing with something as child deaths and the gruesome nature of it as well, because let's not forget, I mean, it's horrifying. It's completely, you know, I felt broken, you know. I think we all think of kids as, you know, as innocents and, you know, having their whole lives to live, and then they're suddenly cut short by such a horrible, horrible instance. And, you know, I think they, as an overall tone, I think they handled those difficult subjects, it doesn't sound right, but like in a tasteful manner, but it still hit home in terms of that real kind of America, you know, a fear that, you know, we have, you know, of trying to protect our kids from sort of like an evil, and then suddenly that evil is it wins, and that's, I thought that resonated a lot for me when I watched it.
Yeah, I did too. Let me just give the last word from Twitter to Michelle Milbauer, who says very simply, Mr. Chuckle, nope. Clearly not a fan.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, I think we've covered it there, Kalechi, but have you got anything else you wanted to say, you know, in summary?
I think I've said everything that I've had to say. I mean, like I said, I've I've enjoyed what Benjamin Van Allen did, and Holly Dale, who has directed episodes of like Grimm and Dexter. So it seems to be a perfect natural fit for this episode. And, you know, I think I agree with Tony, you know, if Chris Carter ever decided to pass that baton onto a new generation, the same way that, you know, I guess George Lucas passed on the baton to like J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson for Star Wars, you know, I can't think of a better partnership to do it, because I think you might have to correct me if I'm wrong. I think Benjamin Van Allen has been, you know, staff writer on the show for a while, so he's certainly learnt the tricks of the trade, and he's certainly delivered an episode that, as much as it's a subtle one, so it doesn't have that kind of instant replay factor, but it still hits home, and I think that is in itself a classic X-Files. And as everyone has summed up, it's definitely a proper monster of the week. We haven't had that in a long time. It's great to see it back again, and it feels very much like X-Files of old.
Let's have a quick word then on the end of the season, because I've been asking everybody I've been talking to about this, you know, really since the series came back from the break for the Winter Olympics, you know, because like the end is nigh.
Yeah.
I mean, let's leave to one side anything you may have seen in promos or whatever. But that final episode, yeah, what do you think the priority should be in concluding season 11? What should Chris Carter be striving for, you know?
Well, I hope that since everyone else has had their time to do their own unique standpoint on the series, you know, if you're looking at Kevin Hooks and Holly Dale and Benjamin Van Allen, Glenn Morgan and James Wong, you know, they've all done their influences. And I hope that while they've been doing that, he's able to construct, you know, a good finale. You know, he has the time and the focus. And I kind of want the Chris Carter that did Plus One. You know, that kind of, you know, he knows what he's doing. He seems like he's in control. He seems like he's enjoying it. I mean, it would be nice for it to be, you know, like a 2-hour finale, or certainly let's be realistic, maybe in an hour, you know, to kind of maybe give it a little bit more of a conclusion and a balance. But hopefully structurally and in terms of consistency, I hope that he kind of knows where things are and reshapes that balance and gives a finale that I guess is worthy of, you know, of all the other finales that we've seen on this show. But I think the only thing I can hope for is, again, is a definite closure for Mulder and Scully. It would not surprise me if he leaves a few strands to possibly explore if it ever came back, whether it's a season 12, whether it's a film or something along those lines. But again, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. It might be an unpopular opinion, and don't get me wrong, I've been going backwards and forwards in terms of thinking whether it could work or not. But, you know, I do think from this season alone, I think there is evidence to suggest that X-Files could potentially survive without Mulder and Scully. You know, I know Gillian has made that evidently clear. You know, I know that for a fandom, we are naturally geared towards Mulder and Scully and all the, you know, whether it's the investigations and their romantic side of their life and their relationship. But I think one of the good things, if Carter can put that, and again it's just an idealist fantasy, would, you know, to have this kind of almost a spiritual baton passed on, that, you know, that Mulder and Scully is such a legendary status that it inspires a whole new generation, and that in itself, you know, could be a good way to kind of end the series on a high point.
Yeah, I think the key thing, I agree with a lot of that, but, you know, you said about Carter having the time and focus to kind of get the finale how he wants it, and that's mainly what I agree with, because, like, he doesn't owe me anything.
Yeah.
He's got no responsibilities to me. I'm just interested in seeing what story he comes up with, you know. So hopefully he's been able to give it, you know, if not undivided attention, you know, the attention it needs to be successful. But we shall see, shan't we?
Yes.
Kelechi, tell us where we can find you online, and, you know, give your blog a shout out and stuff like that if you want.
Yeah, you can find me at confessionsfromageekmind.com. That's the blog. And you can find me on Twitter at geekminduk.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for joining me today.
But yeah, thank you very much for having me on. as a long time listener of this podcast, it's always a treat to be asked to come back, and I love the whole production values on this, and and you know, just the lovely engagement from you yourself, Carl, and Tony, and everyone else involved. And hopefully I'll be back sooner. I don't leave it too long. And thank you very much for having me on. It's been, as always, a pleasure.
Well, that's it for today, really. I mean, if you want to support the podcast, you can find us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thexcast to do so. Of course, we're on Twitter at @X_cast. We're on Facebook. Search for X-Files Basement for lots of discussion between episodes, before episodes. And, you know, once the season's over, we ain't going anywhere. And it's a really nice group over there, too. So I hope you can all join us there. But until next time, everyone, trust no one.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.